Hello, Green Bay Packer fans. Welcome to the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Your Green Bay Packers just beat the San Francisco 49ers 34-16, and we are here to break the game down. We're here to talk about their performance and about the Green Bay Packers now being 8-4, twice as many wins as they do losses. Happened to see the Chicago Bears beat the Detroit Lions today, so Packers just keeping pace with the Bears. And of course, the race to win the NFC North could come down to the final game of the season. We will see lots of football to be played between now and then. But rejoice, Packer fans. Very good win today. What we're going to do is recap the scoring, recap some of the individual statistics for the Packers, and then it's time to break it down, analyze the game, talk about what you want to talk about, and we'll open up the phone lines a little bit later too. But let's get right down to it. The 49ers get on the scoreboard first today, take a 3-0 lead behind a Jeff Reed 44-yard field goal. San Francisco leads 3-0. That's it in the first quarter till the 49ers get another field goal, this time 26 yards from Jeff Reed, take a 6-0 lead. And then the Packers get on top with 7:02 left in the second quarter. Greg Jennings gets a 57-yard touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers to make it 7-6. John Kuhn adds to that score, gets a 1-yard touchdown run with 1:46 left in the second quarter, makes it 14-6 Packers. But the 49ers come storming back just before halftime, 1:26 left. Vernon Davis gets a 66-yard touchdown strike from Troy Smith to pull within 1 point. Packers lead 14-13 going into halftime. Third quarter. Packers come back. Donald Driver gets into the scoring act, gets a 61-yard touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers. Mason Crosby extra point makes it 21-13 Packers. San Francisco cuts into the lead, makes it 16-21 behind a Jeff Reed 23-yard field goal. And then all Packers from there on out. Late in the third quarter, 3:37 left in the third, Greg Jennings gets his second touchdown pass of the day of the 1-yard variety from Aaron Rodgers, 28-16 Packers. And then in the fourth, the Packers add to their lead behind two Mason Crosby field goals. The first one, 43 yards, makes it 31-16 Packers. And then just with 3 minutes remaining in the game, 3:10, Mason Crosby adds a 24-yard field goal. Your final score, Packers 34, San Francisco 49ers 16. As far as the individual statistics for the Packers today, Aaron Rodgers completes 21 of 30 passes, 298 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions for a rating of 135.1 for the Green Bay Packers. In the rushing department, James Starks carries the ball 18 times for 73 yards, good for a 4.1 yard per average carry, long of 16. He is your leading rusher for the Green Bay Packers, and believe me, we'll talk all about James Starks a little bit later. Aaron Rodgers, your second leading rusher today, 4 carries for 39 yards, scrambling for a few times there. John Kuhn, 6 carries for 13 yards and 1 touchdown. But the more important thing is John Kuhn converting first downs and touchdowns for the Packers, despite a paltry 2.2 yard per carry average. Brandon Jackson, just 4 carries on the day, 13 yards, and that will be a hot topic of conversation as well. Of course, Matt Flynn knelt down at the end, 2 carries for minus 2 yards, but those are the best negative yardage carries you can possibly have. In the receiving department, Greg Jennings leads the way in both catches and yards, 6 for 122, a 20.3 yard per catch average, 2 touchdowns for the Packers. Donald Driver, second on the team with 4 catches for 73 yards, also gets into the scoring act with a touchdown of his own. Brandon Jackson catches the ball four times for 63 yards. Jordy Nelson getting two passes for 15. Corey Hall, 1 for 9. James Jones, 2 for 8. John Kuhn, 1 for 4. And Andrew Corliss, 1 for 4. So that wraps up the Packers' individual offensive statistics for the day. And you know, like I said, the Packers now 8-4, and that's the big thing to take away from this. They're keeping pace in the NFC. Depending on, you know, coming into this game, they were on the outside looking in the playoff picture. Aside from the Chicago Bears, I haven't really been paying attention to the rest of the NFC, but they're just trying to keep pace. You know, they're you know, depending on the outcomes here, they might now be one of the playoff teams, but regardless, still 4 games to go, 1 month left to go in the season, a lot of football to be played. Can't make any conclusions yet, but certainly a step in the right direction. As I thought they would, the Packers would kind of struggle a little bit to begin with and then pull away towards the end, and that's kind of what happened. You know, coming off a loss, they might be a little sluggish to begin with, but the good thing is the Packers looked really good from about the first quarter onward today. And I have a little bit of a message, you know, maybe I should stay away from Twitter during the game, perhaps. Not me tweeting, but although some people would probably be happy not to have me tweeting, but you know, just reading some of the tweets in the first quarter, the Packers get behind 6-0, and I fully agree. They did not look like a good team in the first quarter. I mean, sure, they didn't look the sharpest in the world, but folks, don't be a goldfish. You know, every lap around the goldfish's bowl, it's a new world to them. You know, in the first quarter of a football game when it's 6-0, don't think that the game is over. You know, I'm everybody watching this show has seen enough football in their life, hundreds of football games, maybe thousands. You know that teams come from behind, sometimes by many more than 6 points. You know, even 14 points, even 2 scores isn't, you know, an insurmountable lead. But I must have read, you know, 3-4 tweets when they got down 6-0 that the Packers were an ill-prepared team or they weren't responding well to the cold. Well, gosh darn it, it's football. You're not going to be dominant every play and every series. Okay? Just act like you've seen football before and know that teams can come back like the Packers did and looked very good today. So that's my rant for today. And with that, I want to open up the phone lines. The phone number is area code 646-797-2909. Feel free to call into the show and let me know what you want to talk about. I'm sure the hot topic of the day will be James Starks. And while I'm waiting for the first call today, once again, 646-797-2909. Call into the show. And my thoughts on James Starks just while I wait for the phone calls to roll in here. Fantastic job by a rookie making his first NFL start. I mean, James Starks has gotten more media attention just because of the anticipation than probably is more than he deserves. But for a rookie making his first start, good job, James Starks. Let's not go overboard, but very good job. You know, carrying, what did he have, 70-some yards? We said 73 yards on 18 carries, 4.1 yard average. Fantastic. You know, he has to certainly work on the passing game. I mean, he didn't catch any balls. I mean, not that he was targeted, but he has to also step up in pass protection. And there's lots of things that James Starks can do. But, you know, just a good start for him. I mean, all these jokes about him being Pro Bowl material, or yeah, I even said myself, the mayor giving him the key to the city. You know, that certainly premature, obviously. I don't even need to reiterate that, but you know, James Starks, I mean, all you have to do is look at his carries. He had 18, and then the next closest was 6. I mean, folks, whether you like it or not, James Starks is your starting running back for the Green Bay Packers. He may not play the first play of next week against the Detroit Lions, but that doesn't mean he is now not the starting running back for the Green Bay Packers. All you've got to do is look at his amount of carries and saw that the Packers have made a change. You know, Brandon Jackson wasn't injured today. That's not why he didn't carry the ball. It's because the Packers liked what they saw and they kept going with the hot hand. He is now your starting running back. And I know the term start, it just means you play the first play, offensive play of the game. And he might not do that, but for all intents and purposes, James Starks is your starter for the Green Bay Packers until he proves otherwise, until he gets injured, or until he fumbles or something like that. But no, he's good job by James Starks. You know, long way to go, but you can't complain with the results at all. And what I like best of all is if we could just put this game in a bottle, this is how you want to utilize your running backs if you are a coach of the Green Bay Packers. I think James Starks is your workhorse. He is your leading carrier and he's your starter. Brandon Jackson is your third down back, the guy who will catch the ball, perhaps on screens, and will be your safety blanket in pass protection, and your outlet guy. And John Kuhn is your short yardage back, the guy who you can go to for 1 yard, who you can pound it down the throat. That is, it took the Packers all season long to get to that point. But this is how they need to be utilized. Our very own Aaron Nagler harped on it all year long that they're not using the personnel correctly. John Kuhn shouldn't get but 2 screen passes a year or stretch plays a year. He should just be your short yardage guy. And thank you. I'm looking at the... Finally checking out the live blog here. Rob in Wisconsin. Starter is the wrong word. Feature back or primary back is a better definition, he says. And that's right. James Starks is your feature back. That's his role from here on out. Oppie says, you have to use your running backs to get production. And the Packers finally used their running backs today. I suppose it goes hand in hand. They not only use them, but they use them well. Question, barring an injury, do you think Nance has a role on this team for the remainder of the season? Tough to see him fitting in. You know, no, I don't really see him having a role barring injury. Do I think the Packers should cut Dimitri Nance? Probably not. There's no reason for him to really cut him. But, no, I don't see Nance having a role on the team. Again, barring injury, all of a sudden somebody gets injured, and then Nance can fill in, but that's the way it's going. found in Idaho comments tells you Mike McCarthy didn't trust his running backs. And maybe it isn't. Maybe he didn't trust his running backs. So we talked about the running backs here. I guess the logical place to go next is the passing game. Or maybe not. Maybe I'm missing a point here as well before we get away from the running game. And that's like the offensive line. The offensive line was not perfect today. But they weren't terrible either. Certainly, the running game got what they needed to get. I mentioned this earlier. In fact, I probably haven't updated it, though. The Green Bay Packers rushed for 11 first downs today. I can't tell you the last time the Packers rushed for 11 first downs. It's been a long time. And I think that's how you judge the offensive line today, is they grinded out the needed yardage when they had to. Did they break a lot of long runs today? No, they didn't. But they did good enough to be effective. Against a pretty good running defense. Chad Clifton has never, we can say this infinite times, he's never been a premier running offensive lineman. You know, why he's there is to protect Aaron Rodgers' blind side. Darren College is a little bit undersized. Darren College's best block today was a cut block and the screen game. Scott Wells is undersized as a center. Not to say those guys can't do the job ever, but from the center over to the left side, just not your... You're going to pave the way, going to pave the road for the running backs. Josh Sinton can. Brian Bulaga can a little bit. And that's where you're going to get the majority of the tough yards. But credit the offensive line for paving the way for 11 first downs in the running game. We can give them that. We will give them that. And if they can do that from here on out, and I don't think the Packers will, they're not going to do this every game, but if they can get first downs, that's where they can be effective. And a lot of it has to do, I thought, with just being successful on first and second downs, if you're the Green Bay Packers. Early on in the game, the Packers had a lot of third and longs, you know, third and nine, third and nine, third and 15. Well, you're not going to convert a whole lot of those. It's what teams do in the NFL is they send enough rushers that the offense has to get the pass off so quick, the receivers can't even get to the first down marker. They can't get those needed 9 or 15 yards. But when you have third and manageable, when it's third and one, as the Packers gave the ball to John Kuhn on third and one like 3 or 4 times today, well, yeah, it's not tough to get 1 yard when you're a jackhammer like John Kuhn. It's not tough for him to get 1 yard. So kudos to the offense for just putting them in a lot of third and manageable situations after about the first quarter onward. Pass Packers RS comments, the O-line was much better, but the real reason is Rodgers and Jennings. And I'll move on here. I'll move on to Rodgers and Jennings and talk about the passing game because this is fantastic. Aaron Rodgers' passing rating today, quarterback rating, was 135, which just builds upon his season-long building that Rodgers has just, it seems like early in the season, he had a couple stretch of games where he wasn't doing all that well. But ever since that winning streak started, the Packers had the 4 wins in a row, and yeah, they lost last week to the Falcons, but Aaron Rodgers still played pretty well, especially in the passing game last week. But here he has a quarterback rating of 135 today, and I swear, I mean, just look at Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating from the beginning of that winning streak onwards. Was it the Jets game that started that winning streak? From about the Jets game onwards. And he's got a quarterback rating of over 100 practically every game. Fantastic. And just taking care of the ball. Has Aaron Rodgers thrown an interception since that time? Since the Jets game? I know he's fumbled it. He had the big fumble last week, but has he thrown an interception? I'm not sure he has. Maybe it's been one, something like that. I'm not bringing these numbers off the top of my head, but my goodness, Aaron Rodgers, he has, you know, what might have been in doubt earlier in the season, whether he would make the Pro Bowl or not, I think that's almost becoming, you know, a shoo-in. And the same thing goes for Greg Jennings. Again, ever since about that winning streak. And for Greg Jennings, it might have even happened before that one game or so. But, you know, he's been lights out lately. Greg Jennings today, 2 touchdowns. 6 catches for 122 yards, putting the team on his back. Just like the Madden YouTube viral video. I can't watch that video enough. Oh, Gumby. But no, Greg Jennings, just playing at a Pro Bowl level, I find it hard to believe that he is not a Pro Bowler this season after the way he's played as of late. And to tell you the truth, Greg Jennings might not make it to the Pro Bowl just because he has so much ground to make up from early in the season. You know, he started off the season a little slow when there's guys like Roddy White who were doing it from the beginning. But it's going to be tough for Greg Jennings to make the Pro Bowl. Hopefully he gets a late push and he's in the front of people's minds as they make their Pro Bowl selections. Campbell comments, Donald Driver, the comments scrolled up on me. What did he say here? I lost it here for a second. Donald Driver looked like he was a lot better than last week. Donald Driver looked good today. I mean, he only looked good for one play, but it was such a crucial play in the game where he broke 3 tackles. He looked fantastic. Donald Driver said himself in the Green Bay Press Gazette article by Kareem Copeland, you know, Kareem had Mr. Copeland wrote a lot about there being whispers. Is Donald Driver losing it? People talking behind his back. Has he lost a step? Because he had the quad injury. And then Jordy Nelson and James Jones were having good games. And Donald Driver said, quote, he's just got to, I shouldn't say quote. I don't have the article in front of me. And but I'll paraphrase him in that he's just got to get back on the horse. You know, he's got to buck it up and get back to it. And that's how he's going to put any whispers behind him. And he did today. I mean, you can't ask for anything more than Donald Driver did today with breaking three tackles, making, would you call it a circus catch? I don't know. Maybe the whole play is a circus play just because he broke so many tackles. And who got in his way there? Was it Andrew Corliss? He kind of had to jump over him as well on his way to the end zone. But no. Doing well, though. Fantastic. If anybody else wants to talk about the offense, wants to talk about Greg Jennings, Donald Driver, Aaron Rodgers, or the running game today, the offensive line, James Starks, John Kuhn, please feel free to call. The phone number is 646-797-2909. The phone lines are open. I want to talk about what Packer Nation wants to talk about today and how the Green Bay Packers performed as they go 8-4 on the season. Tony asks, is that a playoff beard? Unfortunately not, Tony. I've said this before, I think, but I'm just lazy. I shave once a week. It'll be gone tomorrow and back the next week or something like that. But a playoff beard sounds good, doesn't it? That's a hockey thing. Except my colleagues like to do it, though. Corey Behnke, Aaron Nagler. They grew out their playoff beards last year. DBH comments, Starks was consistently falling through the line and picking up 3 yards when nothing was there. Jackson generally gets stuffed behind the line in those situations and fails to gain more than a yard. You know what? One time today, the Packers ran off tackle with Brandon Jackson, or right at the tackle, right tackle it was, behind Brian Bulaga. And it seemed like the play just took so long to develop. Aaron Rodgers has his arm sticking out, you know, for about 2 seconds, letting everybody on the whole entire defense know that, hey, I'm handing off the ball. It just seemed to me that the play took so long to develop, and not that it was even Brandon Jackson's fault, but just when you're waiting that long and the whole defense sees, wow, this is going to be a run, they're going to catch up. And I just came to my mind that maybe the Packers would benefit from the pistol formation in that they don't have to go that far for that handoff. It just kind of develops a little quicker. But maybe that's what the Packers want. Maybe they want to show that running that way. I remember Brett Favre used to do that a lot, and under Coach Holmgren. They really wanted to show that that run look, because that's when the play action works. You know, you kind of put the ball out there on the play action, make it look like you're running, show everybody else, but then pull it back at the last second. That's what the Packers did on Greg Jennings' touchdown today. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hey, Brian, it's Keith Kuby. How are you?
Very good, Keith. What's on your mind today?
Well, a couple of things. One thing we were talking about as far as Mr. Starks, the hottest thing to hit Green Bay since Paul Hornung, everybody seems to think today. But somebody had made a comment on one of the boards that he was falling forward and able to gain those yards. It was a little bit different. I mean, whereas Brandon Jackson would typically get stuffed. But the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting, was it just me or did Brandon Jackson on that screen play have an extra gear of speed that we have not seen all year?
Yeah, to talk about the first part of James Starks, I was really impressed by his toughness to fall forward, to put his shoulder down. He had probably one play where he ran for about 12 yards and he bounced off some tackles. And I was really impressed by that play. I didn't know he would be that type of runner. And it is only one play, and you know, it's maybe we don't put that label on him yet, but it was hard not to be impressed by that. And as far as Brandon Jackson, I guess, you know, the deal was is he had room to run on that screen pass. I suppose once you get in the open field and you have some space to run, he'll do okay. He just frequently doesn't have all the time in the world like he did on that one pass play to get a couple blocks and get to that second gear, I suppose.
Agreed, but it was just something a little bit different because typically he must have been had good rest this week or something, because typically in that type of situation it seems like he would get he would trip over a yard line in other circumstances like that. So, but I guess this could be another situation that this could be a development of a quote-unquote two-headed monster in the Green Bay backfield that, I mean, granted, I'm not, believe me, I don't think this is going to be, you know, the end-all, be-all, but to be able to spell Brandon Jackson in certain situations, that may have long-term dividends for the Packers as we go through the season.
No, exactly. You're exactly right, Keith, and thanks for calling into the show. I appreciate it that you're calling in, and take care.
You bet.
Thanks, Keith. I think it's exactly a two-headed monster, or could be in the future, and I'll call it a three-headed monster. If the Packers use James Starks as their primary back, Brandon Jackson as their third down back, and John Kuhn as their short yardage back, I mean, that's how you want to utilize them. That's just makes so much sense to me. It took the whole season to get that way, but I suppose you didn't have the services of James Starks until just recently. And I can understand that the Packers wanted to take their time with James Starks. They didn't want to use him right away. They wanted to make sure he was healthy, wanted to make sure he didn't aggravate that hamstring, wanted to make sure he didn't hurt his collarbone again. But fantastic, though, as far as what James Starks was able to provide for his first game back, you know, his first NFL debut, first professional debut. I never bought in to the fact that James Starks, you know, they should have waited until next year just because he hasn't played since the 2008 bowl game or whatever it was that he last played in. I mean, people seem to point to that point in his career. And, you know, I mean, I'm just at a loss here. Labrum, Packer, and Burrow points out it was his labrum. I'm sorry. But, you know, had they waited till next year, it would have been 2.5 years that he's been off for football. I mean, what's the difference between 2 and 2.5, or 1.5 and 2, or whatever it was? I mean, it just didn't make sense to me. I'm glad he got in the act today, and it was time. I think he showed it was time. That he's healthy, and, you know, certainly an injury can crop up at any time. I mean, can't predict the future, but I think James Starks did a good job today, and Packers did a good job utilizing him. B. Markovich 57 brings up a good question. What's going on with Clay lately? His shin bothering him that much? Good question. As we kind of move to the defensive side of the ball, spent most of the first half of the show talking about the offense here. On to the defense, and Clay Matthews didn't get a whole lot in the action today. Made a couple backside run plays. I thought that's where he made his biggest impact today. He almost had a sack there in that one play. He had Troy Smith just by like one shoe, but he couldn't bring him down. Smith ended up getting the ball out for an incompletion, as I remember, I thought. But he was close to a sack. But no, I mean, what does this make now? A couple games in a row without a sack for Clay Matthews. And he just got to, like, it seemed, I think it was the 10.5 sack mark so quickly that now that he's had one sack since that time, but it's come slow. But, I mean, Clay Matthews, just looking through some of the defensive statistics, he was second on the team in tackles today with 6 tackles, including 1 pass defensed and 1 quarterback hit. So, I mean, it's not like he was non-existent, but no, certainly the sacks haven't followed, which I think everybody is waiting for. Patrick J. Dupree asks, how about the defensive line today? Pressure on the quarterback, good interior D against the run. Jenkins and Raji combined 3 sacks. No, great job by the defensive line today. You know, I would say perhaps most of the pressure the defensive line got was because of coverage. You might consider them coverage sacks. But regardless, they got there. And good job to the defensive backs, too, for locking down on their receivers on those plays, at least. But defensive line, solid overall. Hopefully, Cullen Jenkins is not hurt, you know, not hurt for a long time. I see this as something that he'll be dealing with all season long. It's going to kind of be a lingering issue with that calf, I imagine. I think it's probably just something he aggravated, and I suppose, you know, better he aggravated now than during the practice week. At least now Cullen Jenkins has 7 days to get ready for the next game. You know, if he's even ready by then, I plead ignorance, I don't know. But it's probably going to be something that he's going to be dealing with all year long, and hopefully he just gets better, because the Packers do need him. Packers use the hippo formation more than ever today, with 4 defensive linemen. And that seemed to be very effective. Of course, they didn't let the 49ers run for a whole lot today. And they even passed against the hippo formation a little bit. Well, I suppose that makes sense when you put in 4 defensive linemen on the line of scrimmage in addition to some outside linebackers. It would make sense to perhaps pass against that formation a little if you're the 49ers. But, the Packers used the hippo a lot today. They really mixed up the defenses. Used hippo, used base, used nickel, even used the dime package today. I've waited forever for the Packers to use the dime package on 3rd and long. And basically, what it was they just replaced Brandon Chiller with Jarrett Bush. Desmond Bishop was still off those plays. He did not play in the dime defense. But, I think that's a good idea. I think, you know, even with Brandon Chiller, I think Jarrett Bush is probably better in coverage than Brandon Chiller. So, I think on 3rd and long, that's the way to go. When it's 3rd and 10 or more, third and nine, third and eight even. Bring those defensive backs on the field. Bring them on the field because they are better in pass coverage than anybody else. And I see Campbell bringing up the Vernon Davis touchdown. That, I don't know what was up with Nick Collins on that play. How he whiffed on that tackle is beyond me. Because it just didn't seem like the type of play that, you know, did Vernon Davis really put a move on him? It didn't seem like it. I almost wonder if, like, Nick Collins was worried about, like, being fined or putting a hit helmet to helmet or something. Because that's the type of play, it seemed to me, that you could lay a receiver out. Nick Collins was just coming from a distance, and maybe he was a little late, and he wouldn't have met there when the ball did, but certainly once Davis got it and turned around, it seemed to me that could have been, boom, he could have laid him out. So I don't know, that'd be interesting to ask Nick Collins whether he was thinking about that. I don't know. And I think it was that the Packers were in, I shouldn't say that, they were in dime, weren't they, on that? And it seemed to be that A.J. Hawk had some underneath duties. And Davis got by Hawk on that play, if I'm correct. My memory might be a little bit shaky on that, but interesting. Nonetheless, Patrick J. Dupree says our inability to cover tight ends scares me if we make the playoffs. He mentions Gonzalez, Olsen, Shockey, Boss, Selleck, Winslow. I guess maybe you need Charles Woodson on him. Although Charles Woodson didn't look the greatest in coverage either today. Campbell comments, Tremont laid out Vernon Davis later and jarred that ball out. No, he didn't. Vernon Davis dropped that ball before Williams even got there. He didn't jar it out. But I would say that perhaps the presence of Tremont Williams perhaps caused Davis to drop that ball, saw that Williams was coming, and kind of got perhaps a little bit scared. Could hear the footsteps, as they say. Darren Nagler reminds me they had to be in dime. Bush was on the field. Yeah, they were in dime. Bogman comments, Tremont probably go to the Pro Bowl next season because of his play this season. If he were on offense and a fantasy guy, then people would be paying more attention. Which is a shame. That's the way it goes in the Pro Bowl. You have to make a name for yourself first before you actually get named to the Pro Bowl. That especially goes with offensive linemen. That's the most egregious part of the Pro Bowl right there, is because offensive linemen do not have individual stats whatsoever. Usually takes about their eighth year in the league before they're named to the Pro Bowl, which isn't right, but that's the way it goes. Once again, if anyone wants to call into the show, the phone number is area code 646-797-2909. If you want to talk about the defense, talk about Nick Collins, Tremont Williams, how he deserves to go to the Pro Bowl, feel free. Let me know what you want to talk about. I think if you are an opponent of the Packers, and seeing the dime out there today really brought this to my mind, when A.J. Hawk was the only linebacker in coverage. Not to say that, you know, Clay Matthews didn't drop into coverage ever. Frank Zombo didn't. But just A.J. Hawk kind of being on an island there in the middle of the field. If I'm an offensive coordinator and I'm facing the Packers, that's who I target. A.J. Hawk, he seems to me to move okay laterally, east and west. But when he has to carry down the seam with a wide receiver or a tight end, doesn't matter, that he has to, he gets beat too often when he's moving vertically. That's just me. Aaron Naylor reminds me, people only call after they lose. I suppose so. Packer Ambrose is getting 800 number. Does that even matter anymore? With cell phones and basically long distance non-existent anymore. But how about, we'll talk a little about special teams here. Just one thing I wanted to point out, and I tweeted it during the game. Tim Maste, the punter, say what you will, he had a poor game. He seemed to struggle a little bit with the cold weather and the wind, and of course it's not easy punting a cold football. I understand that. But with four games to go, 1 month to go in the season, Tim Maste has equaled the amount of punts inside the 20 from 2008 and 2009. In both 2008 and 2009, the Packers had 15 punts inside the 20. Tim Maste has already equaled that with a month to go. So, say what you will about him, the Packers are improving in that department. Hello, you're on the Cheesehead TV postgame show. Who do we have joining us?
Hey, Brian, Jersey Al here.
Jersey Al, thanks very much for calling in. What do you want to talk about?
No problem. I just wanted to say a nice defensive game plan by Dom Capers today. Basically, they knew they had to do one thing, is stop the running game and make Troy Smith try to beat them. And as you saw, Troy Smith just really isn't capable of doing that. So they did a good job against the running game. I think they held their two running backs to 60-something yards total. So good job there. They did a good job on third down. They held the 49ers to only 3 out of 12 on third down. So, you know, the defense stiffened at the right time.
Yes. Troy Smith, you know, I think he might be able to be a good quarterback with a little bit of seasoning, but you could just tell he is not up to the level of an Aaron Rodgers in the passing department.
He doesn't have the consistency in his throws. You know, he'll make one good pass and then a simple square out, he'll throw 3 feet over the receiver's head, you know, so that's why you put the ball in his hands, make him throw it, which they did a pretty good job of today, and they hope for the best. And yeah, he hit a couple to Vernon Davis, which, you know, I think any quarterback will find Vernon Davis. But overall, I thought a good defensive game plan.
Yeah, you can't complain. I've said it before. I was impressed by the way they mixed things up from hippo to dime and everything in between. And you got to credit Dom Capers. And it was another one of those bend but don't break defenses today where they allowed the 49ers to score on four different occasions, on four different drives, but three of them just holding them to a field goal. So really, that's becoming their mantra this season. Bend but don't break, I guess.
Yeah, without a doubt. And just one other thing I wanted to say on that screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron College gets all the credit on that play. He made an excellent block. Scott Wells is still running around looking for somebody to block on that play, but it really didn't matter.
Yeah, no, exactly right. Darren College, you know, he deserves credit for that play, for as many other demons as he has. He got it right, done there. Right. And, yeah, Scott Wells didn't even know who to block because Darren College took everybody out. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's funny because I pay a lot of attention to the screenplays. That's kind of like one of my favorite things. So I always kind of look at the linemen on the screenplays, and I can tell you, you know, over the last 2 years, Scott Wells has blocked pretty much nobody on every screenplay I've seen. He's just like looking around, chasing people, looking for somebody, but never blocks anyone.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of consistent. But in this case, they actually timed the screen perfectly. You know, usually either they'll let their players in too soon and get on top of Rodgers and he has to dump it off too soon. That play, everything was perfect. The timing, the block by College, you know, the running by Jackson. When he saw he had a seam, he just went for it. So, good play. But that's really all I had.
Great. Jersey Al, thanks for calling in. And take care. And we'll see you later.
Okay, Brian, take care.
Yeah, see ya. JerseyAl.com. Everybody make sure to head on over there. You know, pumping up the offensive linemen a little bit. Again, not the greatest performance in the world. The Packers, you know, on several occasions failed in the running game. But just as often, they did a good job and got a lot of first downs. Trying to look at the sack statistics from, you know, San Francisco got 4 sacks today. Certainly higher than you want to give up. But I think a couple of those, you could say Aaron Rodgers, again, should have gotten rid of the ball a little bit earlier, perhaps. But, no. Yeah. A win's a win. I mean, when you win 34-16, I mean, you're doing things right. You're doing things right. And whatever it is that the offensive line is doing wrong, you know, they've overcome it a little bit. You overlook these things when you're winning by that margin. Mr. McParty says, I logged on late. Did I miss all the James Starks talk? Yeah, that we talked about James Starks pretty much the whole first half of the show today. But we can continue to laud praise upon James Starks, if you want. Is the Packers were not looking good in the penalty department from the beginning of the game on. You know, they got a couple of penalties right away. I believe 2 on special teams right away, which was kind of disappointing. Everybody got on Jarrett Bush, another special teams penalty. But the second half, they really kind of nipped that in the bud. And let's see here if I can find the penalty statistics. The Packers only had 5 the entire game. And if I'm not, if I might be mistaken here, but all 5 of those might have come in the first half of the game. Or at least 4 of them did. You know, they kind of nipped that in the bud and really looked good in the second half. As far as special teams, once again, coming back to that, Mason Crosby doinking one off the upright today. First field goal of the game. Goes 2 for 3 today. 66% completion percent, not completion, conversion percentage. And, you know, it's It's getting old with Mason Crosby. You know, it seems like he's a 66% kicker. For every two he makes, he'll miss another. Can anybody provide what Mason Crosby's field goal percentage is on the season now? Like, it's got to be. It might be over 66%. I'm sure it is. But, you know, I think, you know, it's probably right around 70. And that's just not cutting in the NFL. You've got to be 80%. You've got to be. I just don't think the Packers can go another season with Mason Crosby. John Rahor comments, it's been old with Crosby since 08. Mason Crosby kicked a game-winning field goal the first game of his career against the Eagles, the season opener that year. Hasn't made one since. And I don't think, even if Mason Crosby does kick a game winner sometime before the end of the season, I don't think it's enough to make up for the fact that he's just been below average ever since that rookie year. And I realize he's kicking in the cold weather, and that's not easy. But so Aaron Biederman says 15 out of 20, not including today. So he made 2 out of 3. So what does that make him? 17 out of 23 this season. For you math wizards out there, what is 17 out of 23? 77.7%. Really? That's right about his career average there. I guess it just the 2 out of 3 gets me. You have to be 80% or more. And I suppose 77.7% is close to 80. And maybe you give the benefit of the doubt to the weather and kicking in the cold. Maybe you do, but I don't know. Farrah comments, I think if every time Jarrett Bush is on the field something bad happens, it might be indicative that he's causing the problem. Okay, I seem to be the Jarrett Bush apologist here. Jarrett Bush had another penalty today. But then the Jarrett Bush got a penalty from the 49ers when he was the victim of a block in the back. And then also, Jarrett Bush, if you were watching the game on television, they showed the replay of him and Brett Swain as jammers on punt return. And he really got in the face of whoever that was for the 49ers, who was their gunner. So to me, I mean, that's what Jarrett Bush brings. He can... That's probably the best thing he does. The most worth he has to the team is on punt return. And I suppose that is a bad thing when the best thing you can provide a team is your worth as a jammer on punt return. It's not like there's a job out there specifically for doing that. But he does do a good job at that. He just, you know, got in the mind of the 49ers gunner there. And got him to the ground. But thanks everyone for watching today. Thanks for taking part in the Cheesehead TV live blog and the post-game show. I appreciate everybody who comments on the live blog, sticks around through the post-game. We love you, and thanks a whole lot for being with us. On behalf of our producer, Corey Benke, moderator, Jamie Jors, and the rest of the Cheesehead TV family, Aaron Nagler, Alex Talich, Holly Phelps. Thanks a lot for being with us today, everybody. Enjoy bask in the Green Bay Packers win, now 8-4 in the season, and heading it down to the stretch run. Next week, heading to Detroit, New England after that. But thanks a lot, everyone. We're going to take off here, and take care.